So what do these so-called jinn want with us anyway? We'll talk with Rosemary and Phil about that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Phil, tell us how you conducted your research in the Middle East.
Well, do you want the long version or the short version?
The medium version, I guess.
Okay.
The one you're the most comfortable with.
Okay. Well, I was over there. I was in Israel in 1995, and I was actually doing research on the Knights Templar, which is a fascinating, I have fascination with. And I kept on hearing stories about an ancient race of people that existed a long time ago, and they started. People started saying, well, they were called jinn. And I was just asking stories because I was just asking about legends and finding and so on. And they said, well, we don't really know too much about the jinn here. All of that information is lost. And when I was in Tel Aviv and I went to Jerusalem, and I had a friend who I served with in the military who was in Vietnam. And he stayed in the military and became very high-ranking military. He ended up, when he retired, because of his background, ended up a high-ranking officer in charge of security at the royal family in Saudi Arabia. So from Israel, I telegraphed him and said, I would like to come into Saudi Arabia. I'm doing research. I got fascinated with it. I know that's the place to go to find the legends of the jinn. And immediately, he sent me a telegram and said, come on over, I'll arrange it so you get in the country, no problem. And so I land in Riyadh, and it's so strange because I'm going through customs, and all of a sudden the customs officer, he looks at my passport, he looks at me, and he waves for guards to come. And the strange thing, I says, oh my gosh, I know what is going on here. And the people behind me in line, they start backing away. And he gets on the computer, and he just instructs me to go into this room, to sit down.
And they're trying to figure out who
and
are
I'm trying
you,
to figure
right?
out what the hell is going on
yeah.
here. Because what happened is that was a time when the king had a stroke, and the government was very concerned about being overthrown.
Okay,
I said, maybe
sure.
he was overthrown already.
Right.
So to make a long story short, my friend Jack wanted to take me out of the customs things and bring me over, and they picked me up in a limousine. First, that I thought I was going to prison, but anyway, he arranged. He said, "We're having dinner tonight with the royal family, and not the king, but one of the princes who didn't show up. By the way, one of the cousins did." Well, to make a very long story short, and all this protocol I had to go through and everything, I was sitting at the table at dinner, and it was the cousin of the prince, and I can't remember his name, but he was some type of minister, and because everybody was calling him Excellency. Over there, you're not supposed to talk to anybody of the royal family unless they address you first. So I'm sitting at the dinner table, and my friend's with me, and so on, and the prince looks over, the cousin of the prince looks over to me and says, "You are an American. Why are you in my country?" And I said, "Well, I'm here studying the jinn." And he gets all excited and he goes, "The jinn?" And everybody on the table just looked his way. And he says, "I can tell you about the jinn. They are in my country. They come into my country from their world. And your government is trying to capture them."
What?
I said, "What?" And he began to tell me a story that there's a group of international black ops, whatever you want to call them, secret organization that is composed of Saudis and other Middle Eastern country, plus people from Great Britain and certain other countries of Europe and the United States especially, that is trying to capture a jinn and trying to get the technology that they have for crossing the dimensions. Now, this kind of surprised me because...
And he was dead serious, wasn't he?
Oh, he was dead serious. And then I asked him, did they ever catch one? And he said he doesn't know because that is a matter of the highest security, and he's not privileged to that information. He said, but he can tell me where to go to... find out about the gin. So he directed me to, and then he said that our conversation is over, and he started interacting with the other, and he started talking in Arabic to my friend Jack, who understands it. I don't understand the language. And after dinner, I said, well, what did he say to you? He says, well, he wants me to take you to a holy man who lives on the other side of town, and this man has all the knowledge of the jinn. So Jack arranged for his lieutenant, his captain, to take me that morning to this holy man, and I was briefed before going, and I had to get out of my American clothes and dress in more traditional clothes because I was a target as an American, because it was not a safe part of the town. You have to remember, in the city over there, they have two classes of people, the extremely rich and the extremely poor.
Right.
So we went to this building, and he told me it was at one time a mosque or a holy building. It was 300 years old. And he said, when you go in to the holy man, you can ask one question, but don't get into a discussion with him. And I went in, and he was smoking some type of water pipe. I don't know how old this person was.
A hookah, they call it. It's a hookah.
A movie. And I started asking about the gin and asking about all of these questions, and he started giving me all these answers, giving me the history of the gin and giving me all these legends and telling me the stories. And after a few hours, he said he was tired, and I was having it all translated because he didn't speak English. But he told me that there was a place in the country of Oman, of a place called Majlis al-Jinn. And that translates into the meeting place of the jinn, which was a cave where the jinn were enter our world, and the jinn are sort of like captive in this enormous cave.
Interesting. Almost like that's where a portal is, huh?
Right, exactly. So, of course, I had to go and see this place. And luckily, you know, having the connection now, everything was arranged to go to Oman and go to the cave of the jinn. And it was an adventure for me. And I wrote a whole chapter just about in the book about it. And now the strange thing happened there. We went to the cave of the jinn, the Majlis al-Jinn. And this place was like off limits to everybody who would go there. None of the locals would go there. But when I was in one of the villages, I think Hajar in the Hajar Mountains, I was talking to a teacher who spoke very good English, and he was Arabic, and he told me that while hiking through the mountains one day, he encountered a janiya, a female jinn with her child, and he said he was terrified. He said, but what happened next, he said, was even more terrifying. He said, helicopters appeared, and he said, government agents from Saudi Arabia and his country and Americans took him to a base in the mountains and debriefed him and asked him exactly what he saw, the encounter exactly, and he said they were interested in capturing the janiya. Now, I said, oh, my gosh, I just heard a story like this. Now, and I said, well, can you elaborate? Give me more information. He said, no, they told me not to say anything. He said that he was more afraid of these government agents that were trying to capture this jinn than the jinn.
Interesting. Now, and it's one of the biggest caves in the world, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of the biggest caves in the world. As a matter of fact, you can fit the Pyramid of Giza in this cave. But the fascinating thing is that shortly after that, in the 1990s, it became open to tourists. And then the government, the Ministry of Oman, closed the cave. They even filmed a commercial in there, a car commercial. They closed it down. No one's allowed there now.
What happened?
Well, they cite that no one ever got killed there or hurt there, but they cite that the cave has been closed down because of safety concerns. But the thing is that according to what the people say over there and the stories, is that the government closed it down because the jinn are there and they established themselves in that cave as a beachhead into our world. And the jinn already have a great influence on some of the governments in the Middle East and some of the towns they're already controlling. The stories I heard is that certain jinn have made their way into our world and are actually controlling entire towns over in Syria, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and some of the other countries. But the strange thing about this government secret organization trying to capture a jinn to obtain its dimensional technology, over in Pine Bush, New York, there was a lot of activity with the Hudson Valley UFO sightings. On more than one occasion, military units came in and closed off areas and told the people to stay inside. It was nothing more than a training exercise. And the stories I picked up before the Saudi Arabia trip of mine is that there were dimensional beings coming into that area and the government was trying to capture them. So this is a story that I heard from three different sources in three different countries about a secret organization in the government knowing that the jinn exist and trying to capture these dimensional beings to obtain their technology.
This is amazing stuff.
Well, I mean, it was like that trip over there and all of this was like an adventure I will never forget. Of course, you know, I probably couldn't do it again, but I was actually at the Cave of the Jinn and with my translator and my guide and my protector, and they said they weren't going in. The only way in is through holes in the top of the mountain, and it's 300 feet down to rappel to the level, and they brought rope and everything. They said, my friend, you're going in alone. And I started rappelling down, and I was down maybe about 150 feet or 75 feet. And I look up and I hear them screaming to each other in Arabic, and I didn't understand any of the words, but I understood one word that they said. And they said the word jinn. And then I see them leave the opening, and they're running down the hill. So I climb back up just in time to see them running down to the car. And I said, where are you going? I was afraid they were going to leave me there. And they said, you have to get, there's a jinn. A jinn told us to get out of there. Evidently, going back to the city, they were saying all of these Arabic prayers in the car. And my guy from Saudi Arabia said that he never believed in the jinn until that day.
Now, do they possess people?
And he said that they heard a voice.
They hear voices. Okay.
And they heard a voice, and it was the voice of a jinn that told them to get out now. And I'll tell you, you know, I was afraid that they were going to leave me somewhere in the back country there. But the cave now is closed to the public from the Omen Ministry. They closed it down. But the jinn do possess people, yes. And getting back to that a little bit, you can't get rid of them. According to the beliefs over in Syria especially, they have holy men who will come and try to ask the jinn to leave. And what they do is the jinn who's possessing a person, and they usually do it to obtain physical pleasures, they have to bargain with them. Okay, we will not do anything. How long are you going to stay in this body? 1 month? 2 months? They make a deal with the jinn, and the jinn will usually keep the arrangement. I'll stay here 2 months, and then I'll leave. Okay, very good. Bless you. Bless Allah, and so on and so on. But that's the only way that you can get rid of the jinn. Sometimes some of the exorcisms and where they take the person, and they beat the person so bad that the jinn feels the pain through the person, and the jinn leaves. But of course, you know, they say that the person doesn't feel the pain. The jinn just feels the pain, but I doubt that. And then the person's, of course, left with all of these marks from the beating. So there's two ways. They bargain with the jinn, or they beat the body to produce so much pain so that the jinn wants to leave.
That is something. All right, Rosemary, let me ask you this. What do you think they want with the human race?
I think that they want to have domination over us. We're the ones who have dominion over this world, this physical realm, and many of the jinn feel that that is rightfully theirs. They don't want us occupying their private places. We have found in our cases that areas that have caves and mine shafts in them, especially old abandoned mine shafts, are really riddled with jinn. I think that we have many jinn habitats right here in America, and we've been researching those. So they're kind of establishing these, by stealth, these sort of, you could call them beachheads in our world, where they're finding more and more ways to come in. As you know, I deal with a lot of paranormal researchers and investigators, and I'm often called to investigate hauntings. I have been reevaluating most of my cases from the standpoint of jinn. And I think that when we have these cases where there are intense and persistent phenomena, very annoying, that resist remedies, that the stuff comes back again and again, we're not dealing with ghosts or poltergeists, we're dealing with jinn. More and more, I think that ghostly activity tends to be more of the residual sort, and the more active things where you've got entities causing effects on people, we're dealing with jinn. I think that these low-level entities who come through the Ouija board cases where people have problems with those, we're not dealing necessarily with demons. We might, but I think more often than not, we're dealing with jinn. So I think we need to reevaluate a lot of our interactions with entity contact. And what Phil was saying about government interest in this, it makes perfect sense that if we could actually capture an entity who has abilities to move between dimensions, that would be of great interest to us.
I'm not sure if the jinn would cooperate.
Some of them might, but the thing is that they would always have their own interests because they do have this trickster nature. They can agree to things that they wind up twisting or going back on. We seem to be, you know, obviously trying to get extraterrestrial information.
Sure.
And contact as well. Some of those cases may actually be jinn cases and not ETs. But the jinn, it's said that the jinn are closer to human beings than are other kinds of entities. They're certainly closer to us than angels are or demons are. And so harnessing their abilities, their know-how to manipulate matter would be advantageous, and I think that we do have agencies that are pursuing these agendas.
How do these entities feed on people's souls?
They feed off energy, and it is possible to make pacts with jinn, the same as you can make pacts with demons, and you're not necessarily selling your soul into hell so much as maybe making a bargain with a genie that your life essence can be used by them for manipulative purposes, which would enable them to come and go between dimensions or to stay in this dimension much, much longer.
Okay, stay with us. Much more to talk about with both of you when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coast2coastam.com. We'll take a few of your calls this half hour with Rosemary and Phil, and then next hour, a full-blown hour of phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Rosemary or Phil, Chrissy from Santa Monica sends a text and wants to know if the female jinn have a different appearance. That's an interesting question. Are there sexes?
Oh, yeah. They have two different sexes like us, and they have children. And the female jinn can take on a very feminine appearance, and some of them are reported to be quite beautiful. And most of the jinn, by the way, if they're not taking a hideous form, which they do to scare humans sometimes, they're supposed to be like made of the purest of fire, and they can take on very, very wonderful, beautiful forms. But they do have two sexes, and And one of the other things is that they seem to be able to have children with humans, and that's forbidden in Islam. But there are cases of it in history where supposedly that there has been a jinn in a human marriage. The Queen of Sheba was supposed to be the child of a human and a jinn.
Okay, Rosemary, as you did your research for this, was there anything that you came across that surprised you?
I think what surprised me the most was the apparent pervasiveness of the jinn in interacting with human beings. I think that it's far more widespread than we might realize because of their ability to masquerade and shapeshift. And it's not just confined to the Middle East, because we know of them through Middle Eastern folklore. The jinn are everywhere. And as I mentioned earlier, we have jinn pockets right here in America. I've been doing a lot of research in the East Coast, in the Alleghenies and Appalachians, which I think are heavily jinn haunted, and also some cases out in the West. We can certainly compare the activity at the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah to jinn activity as well. And in fact, the jinn may intermingle with some of these other entities that we're dealing with. It may not be just one or the other all the time. It could be a combination of. But the jinn are chameleon-like in their ability to make us think that we're dealing with something else.
Okay, Phil, the work that you've been doing as it relates to this, do you find that it is more prevalent in the Middle East, in Europe, than it is here in this country? I mean, are people even aware of the jinn here?
No, actually, they're not. Like I said, you know, I started introducing the idea of the jinn to paranormal investigators in two of my last books. And, you know, it's been catching on. The idea of the jinn has becoming very popular in this country. But, you see, in this country, paranormal investigators and UFO investigators especially go away from cases scratching their head because something's missing. There's a big gap there. What's going on here? When you factor in the idea of the jinn, this ancient race, into the equation, the entire paranormal and the UFO phenomena starts to make sense. One thing you have to consider about dimensional beings in the UFO phenomena is that even Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was the dean of ufology, the foremost authority in ufology until his passing in 1976.
After he changed.
He said to me, you know, I was very good friends with him. He said that he believed that, you know, most of this UFO stuff is dimensional in nature. They're beings from another dimension. So here we go, you know.
As Jacques Vallée has always
been. Exactly.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Linda in Charlotte, North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hello, George. It's so nice to talk to you tonight. I can't believe I got through.
Well, you've been on hold long enough. You deserve to get through.
I'm hoping maybe your guests will have some answers for me. Maybe they can solve a problem I've been having. I've had numerous supernatural things happen for years, and I was living in the Appalachian Mountains. And I started waking up with little bruises on me that looked like fingerprints. And they were taking energy because I would be so weak I couldn't walk for about 3 days after this happened. And this has followed me for 17 years.
Rosemary, Phil, do these entities physically hurt people?
Rosemary's.
They can, yes. They can adversely affect our health. They can do things that we associate with demons, like leave bruise marks, pinches, and that sort of thing. They can cause depression. They can influence our thoughts. And if they manage to attach to people, and I think that some of them do, they do follow people around. Some of them seem to be more place-oriented. If you come onto their territory, they're going to give you a very bad time, and they want you out of their house, so to speak.
Do they want to kill? I mean, can they cause tragic car accidents and things like that?
They can, yes. And we associate that with demons as well. They can interfere with electrical things. Well, Phil and I were doing a lot of the research for this book. I had massive car problems. quite a bit, and you know, interferences that way. They can.
I always thought you had a chauffeur. Gosh.
They'd probably interfere with that too.
Yeah.
But they can also cause financial problems too. There are a lot of ways that they can mess around with your life. But the worst, of course, is when they affect your physical health and your mental well-being.
That's interesting. Now, what do you recommend Linda do, for example? What can she do?
Sometimes they respond to conventional things that we would use.
Do you pray?
Prayers can be effective against some of them. In Middle Eastern lore, prayers will burn the jinn, and that causes them to want to get away from you. So Islam and Christianity, all faiths, of course, have prayers that are remedies against interfering malevolent entities.
Let me ask you, Phil, do you think at any point when, you know, religion talks about hell, could they be talking about where the jinn hang out?
I think they're in kind of a hell. They're like in a dimension that's devoid of physical pleasures, which they want. The jinn do have free will, and so they really can't be cast away. But according to the Islamic belief, jinn, as well as humans, as angels, are going to be answerable to all the things that they've done at the Day of Judgment. And according to what I found out, some jinn do believe this. They do believe in God, so they believe that if they do things wrong, they're going to be held accountable for it. But then again, some jinn don't. Some jinn, just like people, are psychotic. And they will come after you, and they will cause you harm, and there's nothing you can do really to stop them except, you know, if you know how to get rid of them.
If you know people who literally shapeshift, and I don't mean just physically, but emotionally, might they be possessed by something like the jinn?
It's possible. I think, you know, human beings are very complex, so there could be multiple personalities and so whatever. But I think there is some influence on some people from jinn. But most of the time, I think they like to masquerade themselves and appear like spirits or extraterrestrials or spirit guides or other things like that, ascended masters. Just to walk in and get your confidence to make this connection. And once you make the connection, they're very hard to get rid of, because they want you to acknowledge them, to accept them. And once you do that, you know, it's free will, and it's your choice.
I think in the case of the caller's question about, you know, how can she deal with this, one of the things that we have to do is ascertain exactly what it is we're dealing with. And because human beings can be affected by a variety of entities, you have to look at the whole case, how it started, when it started, what it does, and how an individual is affected by things, to try and determine exactly what's going on. And in the case of some of these persistent afflictions, like the shadow people, for example, who can attach to people, sometimes just trying to do some sort of interference in there with magnetic fields seems to be the most effective, and it will at least dampen the activity. It doesn't necessarily make it ever go away permanently, but it can dampen it down and make it hard for them.
We'll go to Minneapolis, Minnesota now. Henry's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Henry.
And Phil and Miss Rosemary, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks.
I just had something to add. I was wondering about King Solomon. You mentioned that he had something to do with making the jinn rebuild the temple. And I was wondering if you guys have ever heard of the book called The Gogeta, supposedly written by King Solomon. It's called The Lesser Key of King Solomon. And I spoke how he would trap jinn or spirits or demons, trap them in objects such as stone statues and crystals. And also, I wondered if the jinn are also possible for the presence of the multiple gods that we've had throughout mythology, since they can shapeshift and appear as anything that they would like to appear as. I just wanted to know what your thoughts on that would be.
All right, which one of you two wants that?
Well, Rosemary can answer most of about, you know, the Solomon Key. And I could just say one thing. Yes, I do believe that jinn are responsible for a lot of our beliefs in different gods and demigods and so on. But Rosemary, you want to take the rest of it?
Sure. There are two keys of Solomon, and the greater key of Solomon is supposed to be the one attributed to the king. And out of all the magical grimoires, the textbooks for dealing with what we would call demons or jinn, most of them were written much later than the time that the King Solomon was supposed to have lived. But the greater key is a handbook that is attributed to his wisdom and does seem to have some roots in antiquity to draw upon, and it contains various formulae for conjuring entities and controlling them. And the lesser key of Solomon came along much later, as did most of the other grimoires. But they have the names of entities. Sometimes they're called spirits. Sometimes they're called angels. The hours and the days that they can be summoned, and some of the magical symbols and seals that are used in interacting with these entities. My feeling about conjuring is that it's tricky business and not something to be undertaken lightly. There are individuals, of course, throughout history who have the aptitude or the skill that they've developed in dealing with the spirit world, but entities are extremely difficult to conjure up and to control. And with the jinn especially, who are very powerful, you're dealing with something very dangerous if you try and have the upper hand in dealing with these entities.
Are you too concerned at all about your own safety as you investigate this?
Well, it does cross my mind from time to time. And, you know, both Phil and I have been doing interdimensional contact work for quite some time. And we have seen other people around us quite adversely affected. I have had no serious problems myself, but I have been affected, especially by the jinn, more so than anything else, including the demonic realm that I've investigated. They've demonstrated their ability to make their presence known in ways that other entities have not in my research. And it's like they want you to know that they can come and affect you if they desire.
Okay, let's go to Joan in San Diego, west of the Rockies. Hey, Joan, go ahead. Hi.
Good evening. I have a bad throat. Good evening, everyone. I'm going to try to make a long story as short as I can.
Sure.
When I was 23 and I moved to California, I was near water, the washing machine, and this voice said to me, "You will have an important mission someday." I never told anybody because it was right in the middle of God is dead and, you know, the hippie thing. And I never really thought about it much afterwards, but my subconscious mind was thinking of it, and I was a wanderer. I couldn't take a permanent job. I just kept wandering. And I am a walk-in because I died when I was about, 45, and in the bathtub, water again. This voice in my right ear said, "You have to go back and heal families." Now, that made no sense to me because I couldn't even help myself do anything. And the reason that I was so ill was I had my twin inside of me. They call it the vanished or vanishing twin, and it's on Discovery Health.
Well, this sounds like a good thing for you, John.
Well,
right?
What happened was after the near-death thing, I started writing. I wrote a screenplay for children that is on a genius level. I sent my work, when it was only a third done, to a man by the name of William Greenleaf, and he didn't even charge me. He just was overwhelmed with the plot and the story. But And then I came up with this craziest way for children to read, and it caused a mini riot at Barnes & Noble's because everybody wanted it and they wanted me to sign it.
Okay, but what are you saying? Is this something help you?
I don't know. I just know that I was supposed to write these things.
So let me ask you this, Rosemary. Do you know, because we've talked about the djinn could be good or evil. Can they help someone like that?
There may be some of them who might be interested in using people as channels for putting out information into the world. And so they might have a different sort of relationship with individuals, which is not to say that every time we're inspired or that we have an encounter with what we feel is a higher spiritual being of a benevolent sort, you know, we're not saying that all those are djinn cases, but the djinn can use those avenues as a way of they could be putting out lines of thought or influence or information that they would like human beings to absorb. But my take on the djinn is that it's always from the perspective of ultimately will benefit them and not necessarily us.
Well, there's one thing I can add to that is that there's a belief that if you're being tormented by a very nasty djinn who's responsible and belongs to a djinn family, it's possible for you to contact a good djinn who's the leader of that family and get that djinn to come and help you to get rid of the djinn who's tormenting you. They actually have courts, according to the belief, is that certain djinn who are doing bad things can be brought to their actions and then and held accountable for their actions. So there is a loophole there, but you know, most of the time they say it doesn't work because the good djinn don't want anything to do with human beings. It's just that the evil djinn, the red djinn, have one thing in mind, and that's the destruction of the human race.
Okay, we're going to come back with full-blown phone calls with both of you when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.